Bhagavate Vasudeva.
So we're going to look at Canto 4, Chapter 8. And we're looking at the open book question. So we're going to draw points and passages from Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home for the forest, which reflect Prabhupada's mood and mission. We're going to discuss the relevance of these statements for ISKCON's development. So, I'm starting at verse 22. This is where the story tends to pick up and those instructions kick in. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada gives a motto here. He paraphrases this verse, paraphrases the Bhagavad Gita, and says, "Go on fighting, but keep me in your mind, within your mind." He says, "That should be the motto of every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness." And so there's a real, quite a statement that Prabhupada is applying to every decent person who actually wants to attain perfection. This applies to everyone. So that's a real ISKCON statement that we can apply. Go on with your duty. According to your natural constitution in this world. And fix the mind on Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions here also that, especially Krishna, fixing the mind on Krishna, because Krishna is very kind. And he can actually help where others can't. So that's the motto. Everyone, go on to your constitutional duties. Fix your mind on Krishna. That'll guarantee perfection because Krishna is so kind and he can help. So this is what we follow in ISKCON. And he's applying this, as he says, to... who is his motto for? For every honest man, every honest person. Seeking perfection. So this is coming from his mother's instructions, Dhruva's instructions, by his mother, Suniti. And Srila Prabhupada adds that, you know, this is the same instruction which is given in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. So there's no difference. And now, here also, that the instruction is that if we're seeking peace of mind, one should free oneself from the contamination of family life and take shelter of the Supreme Godhead by going to the forest. So to the Gaudiya Vaishnava, and that's us in ISKCON, this forest is the forest of Brinda or Vrindavan. If one takes shelter of Vrindavan and the Vrindavaneshri, Srimati Radharani, certainly all the problems of his life are solved very easily. So, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas or in ISKCON,
well, what is this, Prabhu? Go on with your
duty. In ISKCON, we take shelter of Krishna in the temple or in Vrindavan. Not the forest. So we're looking at chapter 8, and we're looking at the question discussing the relevance for ISKCON, statements which reflect Prabhupada's mood and mission. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home for the forest. And at the moment we're up to verse 25.
Chapter 8,
yeah. Hare Krishna. Yes. And so we can understand that Dhruva Maharaj has been insulted by his stepmother. He has wanted, I'll just read the, I'll read the summary of what we're up to. Yeah. Maitreya Muni tells Vidura about the brahmachari sons of Brahma, his demoniac children, and the descendants of Swayam Bhuvamanu, including Priyavrata and Uttanapada, whose wife Suniti had a son called Dhruva. Verses 9 to 24. Having been prevented by his envious stepmother Suruchi from climbing onto his father's lap, Dhruva Maharaj feels insulted and leaves the palace. His mother advises him to go to the forest to find the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his service in order to mitigate his distress. Verses 25 to 38. Narada is struck with wonder on hearing of Dhruva's activities and tests his resolve by suggesting that the path Dhruva has chosen is too difficult and that he should wait until he is grown up. Narada also advises Dhruva to be satisfied in whatever condition he finds himself. Dhruva responds by admitting his inability to follow Narada's instructions because of a lack of brahminical humility and the desire to occupy a position more exalted than achieved by any of his ancestors. So that section there we're looking at now, verses 25 to 38. And we see here in verse 32 on this point of Narada telling Dhruva, the little boy, that it's better that you go home. Now, as Prabhupada mentions, many people think that taking to spiritual life is something that you do later on in life, but actually Narada is giving this instruction to Dhruva just to test him. Actually, the direct order is that from any point of life one should begin rendering devotional service. But it is the duty of the spiritual master to test the disciple to see how seriously he desires to execute devotional service, and then he may be initiated. So,
Prabhu,
yeah?
Just trying to think, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, this testing was not done.
In the case of Prahlad?
Yeah, he was also young, but Dhruva was.
He was a pure devotee from birth. And Dhruva Maharaj was a Kama Rishi Bhakta, that's why he wanted opulence.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it's a different set of circumstances. But so you know, different statements here. When you first look at that look at it, they appear to be saying different things, but they're qualifying statements. So Prabhupada is giving a motto for everyone, go on, you know, based on the Bhagavad Gita, based on the Srimad Bhagavatam, go on with your duty and just fix your mind in Krishna, because he's very kind and he can help, but others can't. That's and that is for every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. That motto is given. That's how we preach in ISKCON. We have to be mindful of taking people out of a steady situation where they're just performing their normal routine activities, and then just trying to slot them into a brahmacharya or a brahmacharini ashram, as done in the early days. In the early days, of course, different set of circumstances. There was an emergency to get the movement started, and basically in those days, if you really didn't insulate someone within the temple, that would just that would come along and you'd never see them again. So it's a different set of circumstances. But then still, what happened, even though the movement became a little bit more settled, in many places they were still trying to just put everyone in the ashrams when there was no need for it. Then even people who were quite happy to just regularly come to the temple, there's no need, therefore, if they're living in the home, to then just try and get them into the ashram. But that did go on, still goes on to some degree. But but we're getting everyone to do their duty, just remain where they are. Very, very important verse that Prabhupada also quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Stita Stania, some Sanskrit there. Wherever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, sometimes people would come and say, "Oh, I want to join, follow you wherever you go." And he would say, "No, you stay in your position, perform your duty, and whoever you meet, wherever you are, just tell people about Krishna, think about Krishna." And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that wherever he went, he gave the same instruction. Everyone said, "Oh, we want to join your sankirtan." "Yes, just stay where you are." And just like that, preach. Prabhupada quoted that verse a lot. And that is the motto. That is the preaching in the Bhagavad Gita. We get people to follow there. Just stay in their natural situation, but somehow teach them to fix their mind on Krishna, give them faith in, that he can help them where all the other demigods and others cannot. And he's also very, very kind. And bhakti is very easy. So that is, quite a strong the mood of ISKCON, and a mission statement based on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all giving the same instruction. Then we see here, generally when people take shelter of Krishna, they may leave their family and go to the forest. For us, we can go to a temple, we can go to Vrindavan, there's no need to. And you can stay in a motel there. I heard the other day someone was telling me, in a home program, they were saying they're building a big temple in Bombay. Big one, real big. ISKCON temple. Yeah. ISKCON. Well, that's what someone told. They weren't from the temple, but they were saying that there's an ISKCON temple in Bombay, and now ISKCON is building a bigger one. Is that right? Anyone heard of that?
No. Bombay already has two temples.
It already has two?
Yeah.
Is one of them a really big one?
No. One is in
Bombay. Yeah. I've been there, Hare Krishna.
Okay, not reasonable. For Bombay population, I think so.
Compared to the population,
there's right. Yeah. Okay, there's so there's two big temples.
Chaupati.
Are they big?
But they're seven, no?
The Chaupati one is in the city centre, but it's very small compared.
Yeah, it's quite small.
Right.
But Bombay needs a...
Hare
Krishna.
Like Kiva VP, you need for
Bhakti. Yeah, you need to have 10 temples there.
So big, massive population.
Big population, yeah. My third daughter just went to India and they were invited to a wedding over there. And they spent $500,000 on the wedding and, you know, got the groom to ride down the main street in a white horse and all that sort of thing. But it was just a whole week of wedding. Yeah.
Remember this, the followers are tested, it's only before initiation, is it?
Yeah, so...
What is the procedure after initiation? If someone, you know, I'm just trying. You don't have any means or anything, it's just, we have to... be faithful. The only thing is faithfulness, isn't it, Prabhu?
Testing after initiation? Yeah. That's testing every day.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is faithfulness, right?
Yeah, it's... Krishna consciousness is a development of faith from start to end. From start to end. Prabhupada says that. So, you know, your faith is being tested at every step, but, you know, this testing is a little bit more official, or though it's not necessarily always done in an examination, you know, the spiritual master, you know, just test. These days, of course, they have Bhakti, you have to do Bhakti Shastri in the disciples course and answer so many questions and things. But even after Harinam initiation, there's Brahman initiation where they have to do another exam and, you know, come up to certain qualifications. They have to show their steady in devotional service, I think. Especially for Brahman, you know. For Brahman initiation, Prabhupada, you know, he wanted things to be even stricter because, you know, when you initiate someone and then you initiate them as a brahmana and then they fall down as a brahmana, it's a lot worse. With, you know, for the disciples' relationship with the spiritual master and Krishna, it's much more disappointing, much more serious for brahmanas to, you know, fall down and leave than first initiates. So, you know, therefore, there may be a little bit more leniency, people taking first initiation, but Prabhupada definitely wanted really tightened up for brahman initiation. So the testing is there and you know, it should be. So, so here, you know, people are fixed in their natural duties in life. They're learning how to think of Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. This is a general instruction. This is the mood of our preaching for everyone. In general, people can take advantage of the temples in Vrindavan. That's where they can find Krishna. There's no need to leave their family or their jobs or their country. If they want to, you know, become more serious, then it is the duty. So everyone is invited, every person is invited to take up that process. But then for more serious instruction from the spiritual master, which is and guidance, which is given after initiation, and especially brahminical initiation, then there's much more significant testing. We don't test people generally, you know, to preach to them or for them to come and join in. We don't really offer much testing at all. But when they want to take more serious instruction in that science, then they are. It is the duty of the spiritual master to test them.
Prabhu, I'm just wondering, this duty, right, Prabhu?
Yes.
Can we expand further into varna and ashram?
Yeah, Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted that Devi Varnashram College is one of the things we have to do in ISKCON.
Because nowadays duty is very duty means I'm going to job. That's very narrow. Duty is a very
Well, now I mean, you know, duty means you know, duty. People have duties as you have a duty as a parent. So keep doing that. Don't leave your children. Sometimes they have a duty as a child to the parents. They have duty, you know, to for their home, you know, or income, earning an honest living on a regular basis and working. And you know, making a home. They have their duties towards the country. You know, not meant to break laws or be a bad citizen. So you know that's you know, quite a lot of duties there that most people have. That's apart from just going to work. You've got to pay your taxes. Sometimes you get called up for jury duty. Sometimes you get called up for war. You've got to follow the laws. You know, they have you know, they also have a duty to maintain their own, you know, body and soul together, you know, in a healthy way. Body, soul, mind. You know, there's a duty to other living entities. There's a duty to, you know, saintly persons. Cows, the vulnerable, and demigods,
sages,
like that. So, you know, forefathers, you've got parents. But, you know, the duties are there.
But in Kaliyuga, they're not aware of all these problems.
No, they're not.
Especially this, the last three, right? Other living beings, saintly persons, cows, demigods, no, they're not at all.
Yeah. Well, you know,
no,
quite often you just have to tell them what the word duty means. They're not even aware, aware what that word means. Duty.
They think going to job.
They think that's where you buy cheap things at the airport.
Duty free shop.
That's not that cheap these days. Now, so then in this verse 35, we see that Dhruva responds. And, you know, he's admitting his inability to follow Narada Muni's instructions. Now, Prabhupada, at the end of this purport, he says, in text number 35, he says, the question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The answer is that everyone is fit to worship him. Even if one has many material desires to fulfill, he should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful that he fulfills everyone's desires. So again, that concept of Krishna being very kind, that has to be taken into consideration. Through this narration, it will be very clear that no one is barred from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one has many material desires. So, here we see a definite mood that we follow from Narada Muni down to Śrīla Prabhupāda, and that is that the devotees in representing Krishna especially his form as Lord Chaitanya must represent his kindness. And that is seeing as Krishna sees, everyone is fit for devotional service, or eligible, despite many material desires.
What do we have to see, brother?
Lord Chaitanya. So, of course, in saying that, I spoke a little bit in the class the other day, because we know that Krishna's club, mentioned in the third canto, Krishna's club is blood-stained with the, those who, take on demoniac qualities, and sometimes people who come to the temple, even though they may chant, they may eat prasad, and may even do a little service, but sometimes they actually manifest quite demoniac qualities, and those persons in that case who may be a danger to the devotees or congregational members or to the deities should be avoided, and in some case barred. the community, the sanctity of the community should be protected. So, I won't write that, but, it's, bear that in mind. We're not we're not fools and rascals that we're going to let people with very evil intent, to just enter within the society and cause trouble. If people have material desires, here, Prabhupada began this conversation from the very beginning, for every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. So we're talking about just honest people, your average person. They may have a lot of material desires. We're not talking about crazies and nonsense people and, you know, evil-hearted people. Just your honest, you know, average, innocent person, despite the fact that they may have so many material desires, they are eligible for that. So we're not going to apply this in a foolish way or in a negligent way. You know, and unfortunately, you know, I make that point because often in ISKCON, this is applied in a very negligent, naive, foolish way. As if, yeah, just bring them all in, you know, feed them up and let them hang around and do whatever they please. One of the problems we have, we will have, is that the more people we feed, the more crazies will come. And the more crazies that come, the more security we're going to need. And the more the devotees will have to understand this point. Because the confusing thing, when you know, you're set up to just feed everyone, and yes, bring them all in from all over, you know, Melbourne, what have you, bring them in and give them a meal and let them sit down and sleep on the benches. There's a problem in that if there's no screening of what those people do when they start hanging around the temple. That has to be part of the plan when you start inviting everyone. If you, you know, just like at your home, you open up the door and say, "Yeah, everyone, come in." You know, you'd understand that there are certain people I'm not letting in my house. Too dangerous, too risky. So we're not going to, you know, this has to be understood. For every honest person, and their interest in Krishna consciousness, Krishna is very kind.
If they're not honest, they'll leave anyway.
What's that?
If they're not honest, they're going to leave anyway, you know. They cannot, you know.
Well, they may leave after causing a considerable amount of trouble. We don't want them to cause any trouble. Because, you know, we also have duties as devotees for the safety of the children, the safety of the women, the safety of the elderly, the safety of the brahmanas, the safety of the congregation, the safety of the devotees, the safety of the gurus, and the safety of the deities. So we, you know, we don't want to have a very unfortunate situation and then do something about it. What we want to do is to understand that, you know, certain people need to be monitored and make sure something doesn't happen to people within the community. That's the proper way to do things.
I think we need a security, I think, for sure.
A security?
Security.
Yeah, yeah.
Security person is very important, even in ISKCON temple, right?
They have it in India. They have it in India. Yeah, they call them chokidars or something, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Mayapur, what security they got, you will be surprised. Mm. They carry gun also, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm not surprised.
Mm.
But here also we need some form of security, you know. You can't depend on Greg, you know. Greg, you know, because I've been saying these days because I'm late.
He should not be secure.
Yeah, but what the temple depending on Greg, you know, if someone can knock him down.
No.
So there should be a proper security the temple has to pay also. One at the front and one at the back. You need to see. Very important job.
Whoever appointed Greg security needs a mind read. You did not appoint someone like Greg as security.
That's what he's saying. That it's
a joke. That's a joke. That's an insult to the community. He's not capable. And that's just, you know, it doesn't take a lot of common sense to understand that.
Yes. So,
now, why the community accepts that, I have no idea. So, we'll just leave it there. But anyway, I'm just...
And not just for security, Guruji, you know, I tell you one time, this is many years back, about 3 years ago, it was peak winter, like June, July, and freezing cold, and the dinner offering for the Lord had come out, and I think when Basi took the dinner, and he expects that Greg will take it upstairs to serve. So that night, I think Greg didn't turn up. You see, that's why sometimes he comes, sometimes he doesn't.
Oh, many times, yeah.
And then the offer, prasadam is still lying in the DT kitchen. And I saw some completely new people. I had to come to pick up my jacket that I forgot when I was cooking. So I came there and I saw the kitchen, I heard some voices, and I saw some completely new people just serving, reserving themselves. So with Muchi place, I went inside the DT kitchen. They were reserving themselves, and I told them, look, you can't serve yourself here. You have to go out. So then I took the place out, put them outside. Then I was wondering, who is supposed to do this? And nobody was there to watch them. This was Pasi Prabhu who left. It was about 9:15-ish, and then there was nobody around to watch what's happening in the kitchen, in the DT kitchen. And
no, of course, Mataji, you have to bring it up, you know, because Sukadev is now.
Oh, he doesn't listen to me.
VP.
If I say something, that's.
No, no, I'm just saying this is an opportunity, you know. I will also mention, because this is the one.
Yeah. My suggestion is that the community discuss it amongst themselves, form a, you know, consensus of what is suitable, and present a joint proposal from significant members of the community who, you know, otherwise nothing will happen.
We should have two securities.
It's something the temple.
But one security means he will escape. He will run away.
The community may have to discuss amongst themselves and present.
Right. Isn't it, Prabhu?
What's that?
You can have one security, you know, someone tells you he will run away. We should have two security to complement each other. You know, like this.
Security not also, I mean, in the sense that even devotees, like on Rath Yatra, they take turns and they do the. Even some devotees just volunteer to sort of say, okay, I'll cover these 4 hours and the next 4 hours, somebody's around.
We should have a proper security manager.
Well, no, but sometimes you need, you know, someone who knows what they're doing in charge, and then, you know, you can have many members of the community just keeping an eye out.
Yeah.
But
you
know, I think it should be a paid.
Well, yeah, you could pay one person.
Your temple is growing, you know. Mm. When they can afford 2 million for the kitchen, why not a security job?
Yeah.
It's very important, you know.
Well, especially, you know, if the feeding of the people increases, the security problem will increase step by step, hand in hand, that'll increase. So, but the point here, you know, here that always bear that in mind, you know, and you see how it's important to connect some of the verses with the previous statements, just to keep everything in context. You know. Dhruva Maharaj is a young boy, he's got a lot of material desires, he's angry. But, you know, he's an honest person, you know, seeking the personality of Godhead's protection, fulfillment of his material desires. So he's actually it says here, no one is barred. No one is barred, even if one has many material desires. But in saying that, there are other statements in the books, negative instruction, etc., where persons who are, you know, envious or, you know, even worse, you know, should be neglected. If they chant Hare Krishna, we offer respect from a distance. That means don't come here. But, you know, we're not going to insult you because you've chanted Hare Krishna, but still, you know, you're not fit to come and associate because of the danger you pose. And, you know, this application is uh, You know, for people who come, you know, to the movement, many of them have, you know, different concepts, or they may have knee-jerk reactions to things that have happened in their life. They may have gone from being very mean to people to excessively kind, and, you know, you get people from hippie background, from Mayavadi background, everything is one, you know, we're all God, God is in everyone. You know, that person is just attacking that woman, oh, well, God is in his heart, it must be their leela. You know, there's so many different, you know, even people are saying, but they have some crazy philosophy. So these things have to be monitored. You know, there was that person who attacked Prabhupada. When Prabhupada was in the Bowery, you know, before he got the storefront, and you know, Prabhupada was, you know, he was in a loft, so right up stairs in someone's apartment, sharing an apartment with another boy, and that boy was on drugs. And one day he came up to Prabhupada with his eyes glaring, and he wanted to attack Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had to literally just drop what he was doing. I think he was typing, and literally had to bolt, you know, down a couple of flights of stairs and run out onto the street without any possessions, nothing. And, you know, so which is quite a feat for someone who's, you know, in their 70s. There's no way they were going to let that person come to the temple. Yeah, that was it, you know. Says here, no one is bad. You know, he had some material, he had some desires just to do a bit of violence on the guru. Says here, no one's bad. So, so again, just following on with Dhruva Maharaj's admission of inability. Dhruva's admission of inability to follow Narada's instructions is very important, because it allows us then to understand, what do we do with people who, you know, even admit that inability? Do we reject them? No. So, yeah. Dhruva Maharaj is also instructing that, you know, this philosophical spirit that Narada Muni is enunciating may be more suitable for a brahminical spirited person, not kshatriya. Yeah. Prabhupada mentions in regard to this that unless a child is trained according to his tendency, there is no possibility of his developing his particular spirit. It was the duty of the spiritual master or teacher to observe the psychological movement of a particular boy or girl and thus train him in a particular occupational duty. So this is saying it's the duty of the spiritual master, not just spiritual instruction, but to train them in their occupational duty. Dhruva Maharaj, having already been trained in the Kshatriya spirit, would not accept a brahminical philosophy. In America, we have practical experience of this incompatibility of the brahminical and Kshatriya temperaments. The American boys who have simply been trained as sudras are not at all fit to fight in battle. Therefore, when they are called to join the military, they refuse because they do not have Kshatriya spirit. This is a cause of great dissatisfaction in society. That the boys do not have the Kshatriya spirit does not mean that they are trained in brahminical qualities. They are trained as sudras. He's talking about the Americans and the Australians. And thus, in frustration, they are becoming hippies. So there you go. What happens when a sudra falls down? They become a hippie. If a Brahmana falls down, he becomes a Sudra. And if he falls down again, he becomes a hippie. That reminds me of a joke someone told me. Temple president told me, I think I mentioned. They say that, you know, sometimes devotees leave the movement, you know, there's a bit of a fall down, and they become a Christian. No, they become a karmi, sorry. You know, they always say, oh, you know, what happened to so-and-so? Oh, they fell down, you know, become a karmi. So this temple president told this joke. He said, what happens when a karmi falls down? They become a Christian. Probably not a good joke, but that was in vain with this, you know, what happens when sudras fall down, they become hippies. So anyway,
I'm just trying to understand this. Fall down. When they say fall down, why do they leave Krishna? Why do they leave the movement? There's no need to leave the movement or anything. I mean, what is that kind of fall down there?
Well, you know, the material desires are there in the heart.
Yeah, but if you practice it, it will go away.
Yeah, if we're practicing, but if there are aparads, then, you know, the weeds grow along with, and they gradually, you know, smother, strangle, the, you know, and stunt the growth. Of the bhakti lata bees, the creeper of devotion, is there in the heart, and amongst that, the weeds can grow if we allow them. So like Prabhupada said, if he saw his disciples, you know, not shaving their hair, and the hair is just getting a little longer, and then he would say, you know, these are the hippie seeds growing like that, you know, they're in the heart. So in other words, he would say, you know, this is in your heart, and you're growing the long hair, then, you know, these seeds are growing again, they're coming back. So, and therefore he wanted to shave the hair. Don't allow some material tendencies to start growing strongly again. Nip it in the bud, you know, in the first instance. So everyone comes to Krishna consciousness with so many material desires, following the process carefully, chanting without offence, especially Vaishnava aparad, then the bhakti lata, it's, you know, four regular principles, 16 rounds, Gayatris, avoiding 10 offences, attentive chanting, that really fences in a very protective boundary for the bhakti lata bij, and also it is that process is a process of continually weeding, you know, what's in the heart of that. So if the chanting is not like that, and the service is not like that, and the interaction with the devotees and the deities is not like that, the material desires can grow very, very strongly. And it, you know, as we see, whether someone is guru, GBC, temple president, you know, big preacher, anything, it doesn't matter. If they allow those weeds to grow, you know, they get so strong that they literally just choke up. The creeper can't compete with, you know, what else is in the heart. So, so you know, no one is rejected for having material desires. But because people do have material tendencies, it's best that they remain, you know, in the occupational duties, you know, family life, etc., where there is regulated fulfillment of, you know, those tendencies in the heart, while they're cultivating Krishna consciousness, to the point where what happens is that the their love of God under that process should grow to such a strength that you know, it's not affected by, you know, anything else that may be in the heart, you know, and then the bhakti itself is sufficient without any reliance on other aspects of Varnashram Dham or, you know, deity worship, you know, that, etc. Just on the strength of one's bhakti, one is completely protected. But until one reaches that point, these various occupational duties, worshipping the deity, are very important because they regulate what's in the heart so that they can't increase. In fact, they regulate them in such a way that they're gradually, day by day, decreasing. So, and therefore, you know, it is the duty of the spiritual master observing a person's psychological mentality to properly situate them like that. Now, when we say the duty of the spiritual master, we do mean it's the duty of, you know, senior devotees in ISKCON. You know, not just initiating devotees, it's the duty of the senior devotees and the preachers. The preacher is the spiritual master, they're preaching, they're giving shiksha. You know, it's important for them to understand this point and you know, very to be able to recognise where a person is safe. You know, as a progressing Krishna consciousness. What happens, of course, is that the danger is, you know, and there should be a department for that. You know, there can be a whole educational institution where people can get some training according to what their, you know, jatiya, brahmana, you know, Vaishya Sudra, marriage, you know, all those different aspects. They can get some understanding of the principles of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which they had with their Krishna consciousness and their work that they're doing. Whether they're doing IT, military, sweeping the streets, you know, they can actually gain something being taught by the devotees. And, you know, if we don't have a Varnashram college, at least generally we should be instructing people. The danger is where temples, because this verse is asking, you know,
we should have a separate, like a Mayapur Institute, like Melbourne Institute, like that.
Mm.
You know, it's high time, you know.
So you discuss the relevance of these statements for ISKCON's development.
Autonomous body, just Melbourne Institute of Higher Studies, something like that.
Yes, they have to be somewhat autonomous. See, this verse is discuss the relevance of these statements for ISKCON's development. How will we develop if we, you know, we just get people and we take them out of there, you know, we don't allow them. One of the big problems that, you know, I see continually.
Mataji is also there, she's taught in Mayapur and things like that.
Yeah.
They're doing brilliant. Without the studies, you know, gone, ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada always says that. Without, you know, reading books, without the knowledge, it's
something's only service.
Yeah, we can't push on
blind. Service, of the service, you know.
Something's like that.
If you're not between you, service also you need. Only knowledge will move. Knowledge only will take the soul from material to spiritual energy.
What were you saying?
Service, devotion.
Yeah. The difficulty that I see that's happening is that when, and this is what I've seen over 40 years, and it's changed to some degree, it has changed significantly where temples have a large, you know, Indian congregation, because they tend to just go on with their work, you know, and then do some devotional service. But even amongst the Indian congregation, I know, because you know, people have brought up this issue with me time and time again, the difficulty they have. But sometimes in order to take up a service, you know, where they want to do a significant service because they're wanting to take initiation, take Brahman and make a lot of spiritual advancement, so they really want to do something significant, you know, for the movement. But there is a inability of the temple to engage him in such a way that it doesn't disturb their ability to be financially viable, you know, because the amount of time sometimes they give, it disturbs their ability to look after the children, again because of the amount of time and effort sometimes to do a service. It disturbs the amount of time that the husband and wife have together, which can spoil the relationship. So sometimes, you know, what happens is generally either you can do the service or you can't. If you do it, you go as long as you can. If you struggle, we'll just get someone else in. But that inclination to work with a person that, oh, I see, you know, I don't want to, you know, we're actually trying our best to keep you nice and steady in your constitutional position while you're practicing Krishna consciousness, and we weren't even aware, and we'd like to be aware that somehow that's actually disturbing that, and therefore ultimately neither your Krishna consciousness will go to a certain point and hit a brick wall when that service you're unable to do, and then all the problems you create in your family life, your financial life, or your job, or your health, that'll also disturb you. So then, which is what happens, and then the people sort of go a little away a little bit disturbed at how they were utilized, and then just after sacrificing the stability of their life, just let go, and someone else comes in and fills their position. So, really, in order to follow Prabhupada's instructions here, from you know temple management down to the average preacher, to the community itself, when people come into the community and they want to be engaged in devotional service, we actually have to be aware of their what's you know a nice stable place you know for them with the amount of time they need for their family, their job, their health, and so many things. We actually have to be fully aware of that as we're engaging them. Not that we don't care. You can do the service or you can't. If you can't, bring the next one in. That, see? So, and that has been a problem that I've seen for, you know, since I've joined.
And also other people will be waiting in the queue. When the moment that the waiting...
Well, it does create a problem because what happens... What happens is that it does allow, if people are within the community who have strong material desires or envy or what have you, people who are struggling to maintain their usual duties with their devotional service, they're in a vulnerable position because they can get attacked from people who want that service even though they don't really know what's involved. They might like the facility or the respect that's involved in it. And this sort of may not be shelter from, authorities above who really just going to replace them if they have a trouble. So, you know, there's no one they can really sort the issue out with. So, you know, it does create... It creates a friction, you know, within the community, which is really just usually resolved by someone leaving that service. And then the person who caused them trouble taking it. Anyway, there's a lot of difficulties here, but, you know, if we do things properly, we won't have all these difficulties, and people won't go away disillusioned, disgruntled, or, you know, disheartened, you know, after... In many cases, when I see devotees take certain services, I feel more like they're being set up for a fall rather than an opportunity. That eventually they'll hit this brick wall and they'll become very sad.
But that's not the trend. We've been seeing the trend, you know. Someone new comes in, he has got his span.
When people new come in, you know, I
After 3 years, then either he'll be pushed or, you know, and then one more new guy comes, he hits the roof, and then he goes. And this is a trend, you know. Mm-hmm. Right, my brother? Yeah. You see?
Yeah. I'm very cautious.
They'll be frustrated.
Yeah, I'm very cautious with people, you know, who I speak to. For them to get a little association, you know, read some books, come to some of the festivals, and somehow or another, I really like the idea of helping people to add Krishna consciousness to their home, as that's the impression I like to give them. If they want to be a little Krishna conscious, they're attracted because they've come into contact somehow, then for myself, I like to encourage them in all the different ways they can just add a little Krishna consciousness at their home, just bit by bit. Because of the lack of departments dealing with, that's blending people's normal position, safe position in this world with devotional service, because it's not really there, there's a lot of dangers, and I do see devotees running into brick walls, and nice devotees becoming very, very disgruntled, it's a real waste of getting someone, especially quite often the ones who may be that enthusiastic are some of the best candidates to go back to Godhead if they were treated a little bit more carefully. So I'd like to see within ISKCON and even this temple something a bit more stable that allows people to come in and be nicely, safely situated, putting Krishna consciousness in the home, doing a little service, and just a nice blend between what they have to do in this world and their, development of Krishna consciousness, with a proper understanding. So let's, let's put this up. So this is part of, the mood and the mission that, as we say here, so it's the duty of the spiritual master or teacher, and it's interesting, Prabhupada says here the spiritual master. He's not saying, this is not the spiritual master's duty. The spiritual master is teaching Bhagavad Gita. Why should it be his duty? No, it is his duty. Otherwise, how can he properly train him in the Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is saying the same thing. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, do your duty and think of me. So in order for the spiritual master to teach that philosophy, we have to say the same thing. Do your duty and think of Krishna. So then the spiritual master, what they have to do is to, give the most feasible means, the most practical and suitable for that particular person to do their duty and, think of Krishna. For some is preaching, for some is deity worship, for some is looking after devotees, for some like that, some is just chanting. There's a combination of those two factors. So let's put that up here. We'll put the spiritual master's duty. And that means it's ISKCON's duty. They have to observe or see, detect, and train. Says. Train in Krishna consciousness According to, let's say, according to his particular duties. Prabhupada calls it constitutional position duties. You know, the training in Krishna consciousness according to their constitutional position duties. You know, like Varna and Ashram, what have you. Just like, you know, the spiritual master sees a certain person, you know, better they marry, a certain person better don't marry, you know, a certain person works, a certain person just preach. And now, Prabhupada, in this same purport, you know, he described, you know, the sudras, the frustration, and they're becoming hippies. However, as soon as they enter the Krishna consciousness movement, being started in America, they are trained to meet the brahminical qualifications, even though they have fallen to the lowest conditions as sudras. In other words, since the Krishna consciousness movement is open for everyone, people in general can attain the brahminical qualifications. This is the greatest need at the present moment. For now there are actually no brahmanas or kshatriyas, but only some vaishyas and for the most part, sudras. The classification of society into brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and sudras is very scientific. In the human social body, the brahmanas is considered the head, the kshatriyas the arms, the vaishyas the belly and the sudras are the legs. At the present moment, the body has legs and a belly, but there are no arms or head. And therefore, society is topsy-turvy. It is necessary to re-establish the brahminical qualifications in order to raise the fallen human society to the highest standard of spiritual consciousness. So, very important. We're talking about Prabhupada's the spiritual master or teacher. Doesn't that cover a lot of people in ISKCON? Spiritual master or teacher. How many people does that cover? Every devotee in a, you know, mature position. What are the qualifications of spiritual master or teacher? They're brahminical. If we don't have brahmanas, how can we do the rest? The whole process depends upon, you know, this brahminical content of ISKCON. And therefore, that is definitely everyone can be trained according to their constitutional positions, vaishyas, sudras, like that. But as Prabhupada puts it, the greatest need at the present moment is this. Developing the brahmanas. So that's a real mission statement there by Prabhupada. Create a class of brahmanas, Prabhupada would say. It is the brahmanas who will, in the Devi Vanashram, colleges, it is the Brahmanas who will actually teach the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas and the Sudras. They'll oversee and they'll teach. Naturally, you know, there'll be Kshatriyas teaching Kshatriyas as well, but there'll also be Brahmanas teaching the Kshatriyas, Brahmanas teaching Sudras. I remember when I was on the farm, someone came to the farm and we had no manpower there. Anyone who would come somehow or another, actually quite often people who were rejected from Melbourne were sent down the farm. So one such boy come down there and he wanted to do some service. He said, yes, you can mop the floor. So in the old kitchen, which is now Money Griever's house, you know, the cows used to get in there and, you know, the birds. And so the floor was just covered in all sorts of, you know, animal, you know, feces and, you know, everything, mice. So I said, can you clean that floor? He goes, yeah, I am. I said, don't show me how to. I know how to mop the floor, he says, you know. He got really angry at me. So he was, you know, pretty much a sutra. And so I went away. I came back about 45 minutes later. I thought, oh, I'll be all done. He's done just a little corner, and then he's given up because it's so hard. Okay? And he's really angry. No one can mop this floor, you know. Anyway, I said, look, you don't mind, you know, if I just show you a couple of things. So I got the mop bucket and put some hot water in. I said, so what you do is, first of all, you wet the entire floor. Don't scrub it, just wet it. Okay, stand there for a couple of minutes. Now you go back and you'll find that'll come off really easy. What he was trying to do, of course, as a sutra, what they try and do is just, you know, I'll get the brute force, I'll get into it, you know, I'll get this floor, oh, and that's 5 minutes later, walk. Like that. As a Brahmin, you're thinking, okay, let's, you know, use your intelligence. And it literally just came off, and he got really angry because it was so easy to do. But I never forget that because, you know, I understood, you know, as a Brahmin, you have to teach the sutras even how to mop floors, you know. There's an easy way of doing things, and you know, by working under the Brahmanas, everyone elevates. If you get sutras teaching sutras, they'll all remain sutras. If you get Brahmanas teaching the sutras, those sutras can become Brahmanas as well. So the greatest need is to create a class of Brahmanas. That's a key statement in this section. It's in Prabhupada's lectures, books, you know, preaching, he stated that a lot. You know, and therefore, and it's also very important to understand in ISKCON, because yes, it balances this, because yes, we want people to remain in their natural duty. We don't want them to remain in that forever. You know, we want them to actually make as much progress as possible. So if someone shows the tendency that they can quickly come to a brahminical platform, then we should do that because of this urgent need. So, you know, we don't say to people like they do in India, oh, you know, you're more Vaishya, you know, business, you know, like that. So, you know, just stick to what you're good at like that. Don't, you know. If we see the opportunity and someone's got the, you know, the inclination, and, you know, by testing and seeing the qualifications that it looks like, well, this person can be trained, you know, to quite quickly come to a brahminical platform, then we take that opportunity. Because there, that's the class of people we need the most.
So,
mm-hmm.
How would you know if the person got it wrong with equality? Like, what's the key recognition that, yes?
Well, they will be attracted to cleanliness. And they will have they would like to understand why things are done. You know, they like to not just be given an instruction to do this. They like to understand where it all fits in with, you know. So you know, there's an attraction to developing an understanding properly of what they're doing, why they're doing it, and you know, attraction for cleanliness and the ability to follow those principles of cleanliness, and attraction to control the mind and senses, and thus remain, you know, peaceful. So you know, nothing complex or complicated.
We just would like to add on. They follow the rules naturally. The rules need not be...
Well, they all have rules. They all have rules and regulations, but, you know, the rules and regulations of a Brahmin are different from the rules and regulations of a Kshatriya or Vaishya. You know, people in business follow the business rules. Sudras, you know, follow certain rules. And, but... You know, if they follow the rules of Brahminical.
What I'm saying is that the rules will be followed, and it's not that the...
You mean like the four regular principles?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
you're not be forcing it, you know. It's they follow it in a natural way.
Yeah, generally, the more one has control over the mind and senses, it's a fact they do, you know, it's a lot easier for them to follow the different rules and regulations, you know, as they're going up. Yeah, it's a fact. The less one's mind and senses are controlled, you know, the ability to have to follow rules, you know, it fails according to what their senses want to do, what their mind wants to do. Yeah. So yeah, that's a fact. But you know, so that peacefulness. So then we look at the next verse. We see Dhruva's ambition. He wants a greater position than even Brahma, you know, of lordship, rulership. And he wanted to get that blessing from Narada. He thought Narada was capable of giving such a blessing. And as Prabhupada mentions here again, the one particular point mentioned here is that Dhruva wanted to occupy an exalted position, not by hook or by crook, but by honest means. So we go back to that point where, you know, this is an important qualification. This indicates that if Krishna offered him such a position, then he would accept it. That is the nature of a devotee. He may desire material gain, but he accepts it only if Krishna offers it. Dhruva Maharaj was very sorry to refuse the instruction of Radha Muni, therefore he requested him to be merciful to him by showing him a path by which he could fulfil his mind's desires. So there's that honesty. You know, I'll try and get it by worshipping Krishna and the devotees. We're certainly not going to break the law or become a rascal or sinful person, impious person to achieve. And you're certainly not going to commit Vaishnava aparad. So Narada speaks to Dhruva. Now I'll read the summary, 39-61. Narada becomes compassionate toward Dhruva and repeats his mother Suniti's advice to engage in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. He tells Dhruva to go to Madhavan to perform Astanga Yoga on the banks of the Jamuna with the goal of meditation, the personality of Godhead. Narada explains how the Lord is a person and describes his beautiful characteristics. He then gives Dhruva a mantra to chant and explains the paraphernalia required to worship the Lord. So, down the bottom of this purport, text number 40, so Narada, he's referred to as Bhagavan, he was very pleased with Dhruva. He could at once personally give him whatever he wanted, but that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before Arjuna, and even though he could have given him all facilities for victory over the opposing army without fighting, he did not do so. Instead, he asked Arjuna to fight. In the same way, Narada Muni asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. So I quoted in class the other day where Prabhupada jokingly said, Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, you just sit down here in the chariot, Arjuna, and smoke ganja, and I will go and do all the fighting. And so the same statement Prabhupada is making. He made it in a very comical way. And you know, in many places, of course, people go to, you know, a temple to meet saintly people and get the blessing. You know, bless my son, bless my daughter, like this. So, you know, this is the policy we follow, and we can use this example of Arjuna that you know, the blessing is there, but it's attained. You know, we encourage people to take shelter of Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, you know, in the home, you know, read the Gita. And if they do that, Krishna will bless them. So, you know, to encourage them to do something to please Krishna. So the blessing is there, you know, but we encourage them in that way. Not that, you know, devotees walk around, someone, you know, bless my child, be, you know, great pundit or whatever. Yes, I bless him, he will pass all his university exams and blah, blah, blah. It's a very cheap way out. And sort of a misguided, you know, sense of our importance as devotees as well. You know, whatever we do as devotees, of course, we understand that the active potent ingredient is the devotional service that they do for Krishna. That's how we feel as devotees. We certainly have faith in, you know, the devotees, that they're capable of giving benedictions and what have you, but we don't treat ourselves in that way. You know, that, I'm giving you this benediction, that benediction. That, you know, I have so many potencies, I'll give you a benediction, everything will come with me. You know, we follow this example that, our blessing is, you know, may you be able to please Krishna with some nice service and he will award you everything. Like that. That's sort of more in line with the blessing that we give, you know. May you have the intelligence and the ability to serve Krishna very nicely, and I'm sure he will bless you as he sees fit. Otherwise, in India, what happens is you get a lot of cheats. People will offer the money, they give the blessing, and they're both cheating each other. Nothing happens.
Blessing for money.
So, you know, our process, you know, we actually, if we want people to actually benefit and for their suffering to stop, we know that, you know, somehow or another, just if they can chant, take prasadam, you know, do something, you know, as much as they can. That's the way we actually help them. You know, coming again back to here, you know, just going on with your duty, but fixing your mind on Krishna. Somehow or another, if we can get them to think of Krishna. Somehow, that's the main thing. Always remember Krishna. If somehow we can just get them attracted to Krishna and thinking of Krishna, in the little which that is where they'll actually benefit. So the greatest need presently is create a society, a class of Brahmanas. Following Narada, to practically engage them in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, this is a big distinction between ISKCON. ISKCON's development is very, see that? ISKCON's development is different to, you know, other, say, spiritual movements or pseudo-spiritual movements, in that Prabhupada was very clever in practically engaging people. He wasn't just going around, give a blessing, take the money. You know, yes, I'll establish temples and become famous. You know, if people were out in the street preaching, he wanted to see, did they take a book? What were your 2 minutes preaching? You know, did they take a book? They're going to go home and then every day they're going to read a little bit. Like, you know, so 2 minutes preaching, 5 minutes down the street, they've forgotten everything. It's something. But, you know, he would say, what will it do? Make, get them to take a book. So, there they've given some money for Krishna consciousness, for the book distribution. They've taken a book, and the book is like a permanent aspect of Krishna consciousness in their home. Something that will repeatedly engage them. You know, when they read it and think about it like that. So, following the Radha Muni, you know, we practically engage people in Krishna consciousness, but definitely according to their natural position in life. And if there's any tendency towards their ability to be trained as Brahmanas, we take that opportunity because it is a very the greatest and most urgent need. Balancing all those factors. So as you can see, you know, in this here, you know, there's a lot of different factors. How many devotees in their preaching or in their management structures are thinking in those terms when they talk to devotees? from what I see, not often. It's and you know we have also a you know, we have Bhakti Bhiksha and we have you know, Nam Hara sort of programs and so many different things. They have to operate within this framework as well. Whether they are or not is another matter.
There's no training for them.
Well, they really, you know,
that's the biggest problem.
Part of, you
they
know,
have to learn on their own, dude.
Yeah. Create the first create the brahmanas and the teachers. You know, the spiritual teachers. Teachers who are spiritual teachers, plus they're teaching some other practical, you know, aspects of life, and then those persons, you know, implement this, helping people be nicely situated in their life according to their natural. They have to be really mature persons to be able to see another person's life and give them advice as to, you know, occupation, family, children. You know, house, where to live, you know, how far away from the temple. I mean, you know, these are the questions people ask. Should I live close to the temple? Should I live further away? I can get work further away, but that means I'll be further away from the temple. Can I be Krishna conscious? You know, these are very practical things. Quite often, you know, the answer may be try and live as close as you can, then you'll be able to go to the, you know, but that can be completely the wrong instruction for some people to get them to, you know, come close to the temple and just destroy their whole life and their Krishna consciousness. So there has to be a lot of maturity. And as who said, training, you know, in this. You know, then it's those sort of persons you want doing the Bhakti Bhiksha. You know, generally I think these days if you get the Bhakti Bhiksha manual, you know, and you got a home and you can cook, you know, pretty much off you go. So
no training in the kitchen also. Kitchen also. People can do that.
Every week they break one user, I think. Every week they break.
It's not training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing, yeah. The whole thing inside, you can do your lunch, get some water in your
mouth. And yesterday I was speaking to one of the pot washers, an elderly guy. He was saying, repeatedly I've been telling them, you know, not to burn the pots. And it's very hard. I said, I know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're just burning. He's telling the guy, you know, so it's mature. He's saying, I also cooked rice. When you cook the rice, when it is boiling, you have to simmer it down. And after 15 minutes, it's done.
Yeah, that's true.
All the rice is burnt. You know. Yesterday was basically.
So, you know, the difficulty there. The difficulty there is something I've mentioned here and in classes in Srimad Bhagavatam is this previously in ISKCON, this is a big difference I see between now and previously. That Brahmanas guided everyone and everything, you know. So if you're in the kitchen, you know, there was a head Brahmana and everything. From the cutting of the vegetables to what was, how it was cleaned up, you know, where someone cut, everything was done with the authority of one or two brahmanas.
Kurma Prabhu was it, when we learned.
Kurma
was it. Yeah. I mean, that's how we know. Yeah. We learned basically.
You know. Now, what happens is that system is broken down where, you know, someone may go into the kitchen, decide I'm cutting up on this bench. Someone says, oh, but I'd like to work there. And they just argue it out, and whoever wins the argument, that's where they do it. You know, and even if a Brahmana says, oh, maybe, you know, it might be better, then they don't take notice. You know? So it's a very important system which is broken down. And, you know, I've told this story before that. Which I wrote a letter to Ramai Swami about, just the seriousness of, you know, the situation here. That I had a person who had come to do a Shraddha for his father who had just passed away. So the whole family come, there was about 70 of them. They wanted a feast, and they paid $1,000 for it. Now, as a bit of a spontaneous thing, one devotee who decided to leave her service and go up north, they decided to throw a bit of a going away party for her, went into the kitchen, cooked up a massive big thing and took it to the park. All the people who were supposed to be cooking for this feast pretty much got involved in that with management. And so what had happened, and they all went, including the girls who were supposed to be serving upstairs. So I did the ceremony and then I went upstairs, as I usually do, to see, you know, the different problems that that are usually there. And he said to me, there's like nothing's here. And then there was the bain-marie thing, you know, that they usually heat up, but they were cold. So then one of the devotees came up and quickly poured all the things in there, and then the prasadam went cold, you know, straight away. As soon as you pour it in, this goes cold, because they were cold. And there was no tablecloth. And he said to me, oh, there's no rice. And of course, you know, for an Indian family, there's no rice. It's like... So I went down to the kitchen. There was a devotee there. And I said to him, is there any rice? He said, no. I said, are you able to cook rice for 70 people? Take about 15, 20 minutes. He said, yeah. I said, like, you know, you've got time? He said, yeah. I said, you know, there's family up there. We need that pointer. I went out of the kitchen. So what he did was he called the girl, not even initiated, who was down at the park having the going away, and he said, oh, Ganga's asked me to cook rice. That should have been enough. In a normal situation, that's enough. He's checked with her. She goes, it wasn't on my list. So she'd forgot to put it on. She told me later. So she tells him it's not on my list. So he made the decision it wasn't on his list, he's not going to cook it because he didn't have her permission. So they didn't get rice. And they ate a cold meal without rice, and this was on his father's death anniversary. And 70 people were all disappointed, disgusted. And a lot of them said they wouldn't come back. He said to me, he saw the difficulty I had, because I took him where I went, trying to organise things.
When did this happen,
bro? I think that was about a year ago. I wrote a letter to my Swami, and he obviously spoke to some people upstairs. And that gentleman invited me to his home, where I did another ceremony for him. He was very happy with what I did, but he told me he wouldn't get the temple to do anything like that again. So, but, you know, I was shocked, not so much of all the bungling mistakes, but the fact that a brahmana of nearly 40 years of experience, you know, that their instruction had no influence in this temple. That things are constructed in such a way that if someone who is untrained is put in a position, that position means everything, not the brahmana, not the person. You know, it is just the position. The training, the qualifications have no influence at all. That person gives the instruction, everyone follows that person. So the system is broken down. You know, I saw that the proper system, they have to be brahmana, that's it. You know, a devotee has been preaching for many years, and that's enough. You know, someone gives an instruction. Very, you know, to disobey that in our day, we wouldn't think of it. You know, Brahmana said something, even if it was crazy, we would follow it. You know, I told you the story about how I got thrown in jail. Can I tell you that one?
Oh.
Funny story. Give an idea. You know, this is how we act in that. We're in Perth, and the temple president, he came up to me one day. We were going out on Harinam, and there's only about, you know, a few men, about four or five men and the wives. He said, if anyone comes up to you today and says, who's the leader, you say, you're the leader. Have I told you that story? No.
I think you did, but anyway.
So anyway, no questions asked. Okay, all right, Prabhu. You know? So we go out in Harinam and we go into the mall and there's Myers, you know, windows, and they've got an awning comes out into the mall just about, you know, half a metre. We were standing in front of their window doing Harinam, because that's where the, you know, Prabhu has said we must stand there. So we're standing there, the manager comes out and says, you know, who's the leader here? You know, the temple president looks at me. I say, oh, I'm the leader. He says, you'll have to move here because, you know, if you even move just a little forward of the awning, you'll be okay. Otherwise, you're on private property and we'll call the police because you're blocking our window. So I turned to the temple and he said, no, he wants us to move. Blah, blah, blah. He said, tell him we're not moving and tell him to chant Hare Krishna. We're not moving and would you like to chant Hare Krishna? He says, all right, I'm calling the police. So he calls the police. Police come and pull up the paddy wagon. Same thing. I've been informed that if you just move, you know, a little bit forward, then, you know, everything will be fine. Otherwise, you're on private property, you're blocking the window, otherwise, we'll throw in the paddy wagon and take you down, throw him jar. He wants us to throw him jar, but I mean, tell him not move. Tell him to chant Hare Krishna. We're not moving. Would you like to chant Hare Krishna? Right, into the paddy wagon. So all we get thrown in the paddy wagon, because the wives are more intelligent than men, they just walk off. Went back to the temple. So we all get thrown in jail. So we're in jail, and again he says to me, anyone comes up to you and says, who's the leader? You tell him you're the leader. What he was trying to do was, you know, one time, like, the Korma got thrown in jail, there was a whole lot of publicity, and Korma become a big hero. You know that story?
Yeah.
Yeah, he fasted. And there was another occasion, I think he wanted to do something like that, you know, like that. So that's what he was aiming for. Big preaching ploy. Anyway, what happened was the police come into the cell and said, yeah, we're all in there together with the other, you know, fools. And he says, all right, who's the leader here? Ganesh looks at me. I'm the leader. I think I'm going out to cop the beating. So anyway, he goes, all right, you're bailed out. So I come out because what had happened was a devotee had come through from Hong Kong who used to drop off our paintings that we used to sell. But he didn't know what anyone's you know, Western names were. So he said, I'll bail out the leader. So I went back to the temple with him, and then we, you know, with the wives, and we had a discussion with the wives, and I said to them, look, you know, you've got two choices here. We can, you know, try and scrounge up a bit of money, you know, a few hundred dollars, which in those days we just didn't have.
The wife said no.
And, yeah, you know where it's going. Or we could just leave them there for a night or two, whatever happens. And they go, oh, we'll just leave them there. Especially the temple president's wife. The temple president's wife is now one of the biggest campaigners against injustices in ISKCON against women and children. She has a lot of... And I think later, she was the one who eventually said to me, you know, you've got to do something, which I wrote a letter to the GBC and that temple president was expelled. But she's still fighting for, you know, the rights of the children and... women in this country. She has a big internet base. But anyway, I always remember that because I had no choice but to follow the Brahmana. If I didn't follow, I'd be just kicked out. And then what they do is, if I went to go to another temple, they ring them and say, here's a rascal, we kicked him out of the temple. Don't let him in. So you sort of really, you know, with your family, what have you, you have... No job, no money, you know, this is West Australia. You know, you're kicked out, you're basically, you don't know whether you'll get in another temple, and they just lie to each other. So you really just had very little choice. And but there you see, you know, I just, you know, respectfully followed the Brahmana, even though it was completely ridiculous. But, you know, we certainly didn't have the attitude that, you know, we would just stand and confront someone and yell at them. You know, there was sort of... You still have to maintain etiquettes because you are dealing with a Brahmana. They are a Brahmana, even though they're doing something stupid. You still have to maintain etiquettes. Their foolishness is not a justification for us to, you know, commit apparat. So, but I did deal with it later. As I said, that person was removed from their position. So, you know, enough's enough. But, you know, you do it in a brahminical way, not in another way. So, and you have to wait for Krishna's protection. But the thing is, you know, like what you're seeing in the kitchen, this is the actual process. You train brahmanas, and those brahmanas are guiding everyone. From the people who are mopping the kitchens, you know, using the appliances, cutting the vegetables, no one is exempt. You know, the brahmanas, that, you know, and what happens generally when people follow brahmanas and things are done really intelligently with the minimum problems and, you know, very efficient and very good results, people become pleased to follow brahmanas. So it's a good system, you know. But that has actually broken down quite considerably in ISKCON. A lot of it happened, especially when some of the big gurus fell down, you know, in the 80s. That was a big part of losing faith in authorities in ISKCON. Temple presidents, GBCs, a lot of big men and ladies left the movement, and there's been a gradual erosion of the relationship between devotees and the authorities ever since then. And in some places it's getting worse, some places they've repaired it. But that actually had a major effect which we're still feeling to this day, where it means nothing to be an authority because other authorities have given authorities a bad name. It means nothing to be a Brahmin. And this is why, you know, we want devotees to be able to preach this. This is the proper system in ISKCON, and we want devotees to understand and practice and implement and preach it. It should never break down to something else, where you've got, you know, uninitiated, untrained persons who are dictating to the brahmanas as to even very serious situations and preaching situations. How does that work? And if that's there, you know, that's a big problem. That system is, you know, it's not been. We actually want the people who come to Krishna consciousness to be very stable and making progress continually, day by day, and coming to, you know, those coming to Brahminical platform, coming to Krishna consciousness. And we want that to accrue over the course of an entire lifetime, and they go back to Godhead. Whenever there's material motivations involved in an organisation, so I'm not saying ISKCON, but whenever there's material motivations, it works in the opposite way. As people gain influence, you actually want them to go out the door, because they become a threat. And you want just newer and newer people coming in who are easy to exert authority over, especially even if there's some mistakes in that. You don't want people staying around becoming influential. So we don't want to become like other corporations. We have a whole different system which is not based on that sort of envy. And if we don't implement this, our environment will be the same as any other business corporation. Just a swinging door for, you know. So, you know, my mother was telling the story to me the other night. She worked in this yakka that made jeans and what have you, and you know, it was very hard work. He used to bring in a lot of people from Asia and just pay them, you know, very minimum wages. If they wanted to go to the toilet, they had to ask permission, and someone had to go to the toilet with them to make sure they went. The boss was just this real mean person. And she complained, you know, she'd been there working a long time, longer than anyone, many years. And he brought her into the office and said, you know, we don't want any communistic philosophy in here, you know, you're sacked. And that was it. So as soon as she had any influence or say or position, she was a danger. So we don't want to become, you know, this is what protects us from that. This protects us from, all, you know, the material effects of, if we don't implement, though, we'll end up the same. So, now, the next verse, how are we going for time? Are we still within the realms? Is that the time? Yeah, it is 5:06. Okay. We can leave it there. This is pretty much, you know, when you get to this point here about this need for brahmanas, the greatest need presently to create brahmanas, and then having, you know, brahmanas to train people both in the constitutional position and practically engaging them in Krishna consciousness. That's the main part, really. You've got to, you know, work your essay around, and that should give you plenty of room, you know, for things to talk about. And I'll just finish with this just point here, nice little point about Shalimar. Prabhupada says in the purport of 41, in Bhagavad Gita it is said that only with the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can the demigods offer benedictions. Therefore, whenever any sacrifice is offered to a demigod, the Supreme Lord, in the form of Narayan Sheela or Shalagram Sheela, is put forward to observe the sacrifice. See? So when, even, you know, in a lot of ceremonies, because we're talking about people who have material desires, a lot of people that do the ceremonies with me, they have all sorts of desires. I want my child to have this beautiful head of hair after you cut the hair. So many different things, you know. But if I have the Shalagram there, I'm guiding all the worship to him for his satisfaction, and then only then can other benedictions, as the Lord, you know, demigods may give a nice head of hair and so many things. But this Shalagram is central.
They can go to the saloon and they can change white Krishna.
Sorry, Prabhu, I have to go.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we're heading off too. Okay.
Sorry.
Hey, Krishna. But,
they will put the clip or something, Prabhu, for half an hour or something. Then your hair will become curly. $20-$25, sorry.
Is that what you do at home?
No, you get that? I've seen people in all curly hair. You know? And they go to the saloon, I see the...
I know what to buy him for his birthday.
Then I go for the haircutting, Prabhu. I see the ladies and all that. One will be, you know, with all this one down, one up like this. All varieties will be there. I just have a look, okay, what are you doing? So one with the clip and one with the thing, you know. So, but $25, you know, why do they want Krishna for that dirty hair?
Maybe they want hair like Krishna. Anyway, there we go. Let's leave it there. And we'll see you next week. Hopefully not with hair curlers. Any essays to hand in?